for June 5th, 2020, we talk about Minecraft Dungeons, how scary and uncertain things are right now, and we ask you to wish games into and out of existence. Welcome to Level 331. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Just going to get this out of the way here at the front. Excuse me of virtue signaling if you wish. I kind of don't care. But Black Lives Matter. Also, happy Pride. Each of us deserves to have dignity and to be safe. And to look for happiness, regardless of, well, right now, when our president has said, hey, we're going to try and use the United States military on citizens. Yeah, I'm kind of front loading this right now because it's kind of impossible to pretend that this is not happening, that this is not what I have been losing my shit over. Yeah, the videos that I have seen. You know, and you can say, hey, this is taken out of context or whatever, but it's probably close to north of 50 videos of unprovoked violence by police against protesters, demonstrators, you know, and there can be a lot of hemming and hawing about what is good tactics and what's bad. I'm not going to make that judgment or whatever. I am not down with kind of the mainstream line of, you know, talking about holding a candlelight vigil for the windows at the front of Target. Fuck that. If that is your thought right now, when people are dying in the fucking streets, maybe miss me with that shit. So,
although I do have to say, I get literally all my groceries from Target. I am currently figuring out where I'm going to get groceries.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but obviously, yeah. Seriously, guys, like,
whatever, 3 months ago, not even, time is meaningless at this point, but I remember looking at what was going on in Hong Kong and thinking, oh, that's so fucked up. Like, how could a government do that to their people? This is terrible. But congratulations. It's at our front porch.
Yeah, no, just, you know, just taking a police SUV and barreling it through, protesters, shooting, all manner of projectiles, quote, less than lethal projectiles, at press, pushing down old people in Utah. Ben, you just shared a list of the terrible things, this is exhaustive.
It's from Reddit, and it was only taken halfway through today, so I'm sure it's grown since then.
But, you know, and so, like, so we're recording this, you know, it's just short of 9 p.m. on Monday, June the 1st. Normally, like, these episodes kind of come out, like, this will come out on Thursday for early release, and then Friday, we're going to be in a whole different world by the time Friday comes around. You know, and I don't have an awful lot of faith that world is going to be better. So I don't know. Thinking about why I'm doing this, why I'm rambling, and I'll let you guys talk. But for me, I need people to understand you're not crazy. If you are distressed, if you are sobbing when you watch a tanker truck barrel down the highway at peaceful demonstrators, you're not insane, and you're not alone.
Right. And likewise, if you don't, you know, necessarily have that emotional response, because, you know, not everyone processes, you know, trauma in the same way. Right. And, you know, there's no right way to deal with the, you know, either the trauma or the stress or, you know, all the different things we're going through right now.
100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're not alone, and you're not out of bounds. You're whatever you're feeling is valid. Whatever you're doing to demonstrate this and push back, that is valid. Nobody can take any of that away from you.
Mm-hmm.
As a very real reminder, I can see two helicopters outside over downtown Seattle because there have been protests of the past 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, this has been, and I'm not, you know, I don't know. I just pulled a Joe Biden there and completely ripcorded out of a thing. I was just going to say, and I'm saying this from a perspective of privilege. I'm saying this from a perspective who is not a person of color who lives under this terror, you know, every single day. It feels real this time, and I've not been able to look away. And maybe that is bad for me. I'll cede the floor to you guys because it's obvious that I've been neck deep in this for too long.
So I was talking to my old roommate about this, and she happens to be a person of color, but she was talking about how any anxiety you might feel right now about everything that's going on with protests and rioting, mm-hmm. that a lot of times people of color feel that way just around a police on a basis, you know what I mean? No, when there's not like a pandemic or a catastrophe going on. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that kind of hit home where it's like, oh, well, you know,
Yeah, it's always been a war. I mean, with the, you know, so you've got two choppers visible from your apartment, Ben. How are you doing up there in Seattle?
I mean, even though there's two choppers, I think it's been relatively calm in Seattle. Two police cruisers got set on fire. The police are like, okay, so when police people that circulated around is like a police officer put his knee on someone's neck, and then people immediately started shouting, and another police officer took his knee off the neck. So at least that was a silver lining to the whole situation. What else? There was one other where the cars that were set on fire, like some sort of protester just grabbed an assault rifle out of one of our cars, and a reporter security like came up pointing a handgun at him, took the rifle away, and then like disarmed it, took out the ammo and stuff like that. Wow. That was another like positive event. It's just crazy.
So David, you're up in New York, and I saw some real bullshit going down up there. How are you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally fine. So I live, relatively near to City Hall, which is where some of the rioting was, kind of doing a march to City Hall on Saturday.
Yeah.
However, kind of between me and all of that is the 9/11 memorial, which is always like super, super highly guarded. So it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not really at risk. That being said, this city itself is, definitely a little crazy right now. It's a real weird thing where it's, there's really honestly like two different protests or riots or whatever you want to say going on right now where, during the day, it's just the normal, people chanting, speeches on megaphones, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But then it seems like each night, things just get crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just, I have no idea what's going to happen, honestly.
Yeah.
Like the saying goes, nothing good happens after 10 p.m.
Yes, or now 11 apparently, because that's when curfew is.
That's super weird that they moved the curfew back. Oh man.
Well, we're reopening. We got to get our drink on. So
yeah, no, I'm just saying, got to go consume. Man, how about you, Dennis? What's going on down Cincinnati way?
Yeah, I don't know. It's we've had our fair share of riots and curfews as well. Nothing so dramatic as the rest of the country, but it is just a picture of brokenness. And,
yeah.
Man, no. you, uh,
I, I saw some real bullshit happening in Cincinnati too. At the courthouse, the police took down the American flag and raised the thin blue line flag.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I hadn't seen that. Which that's what you do when you lay claim to territory.
I'd say that's called a coup.
Yeah.
It's tribalism at its worst.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Expect trials and tribulations. It's a broken world, and we are seeing that play out for sure.
Yeah. You feel free to not answer this question if I'm prying into this, but like, has this reached your kids? Like, how is this affecting you as a family unit?
No, I think the stress it has on the parents always trickles down to the kids, but mm-hmm. as far as they're concerned, you know, it's still infinite summer of COVID-19.
Right.
And I think, you know, Jen and I have been very mindful about trying our stated objective. Like we talked about it and said, okay, our conscious stated objective is once we're on the other side of this, whatever that looks like, we look back and say, I probably should have worked harder. Versus, I should have probably been more invested in my kids.
Right.
And we have been erring hard on that side. So, you know, every morning we do what was called circle time at school. But, you know, you read them something, you sing a song, and then you teach them something. And usually I just ask them what they want to know. So, their experience has been largely positive, I hope. But like I said, that the stress trickles down. I think they can sense something is off for a lot of different reasons. Kids are intuitive in a weird way. I don't think they'll ever connect it directly to world events. Like, you can't expect a 5-year-old to do that.
Right.
It's interesting. I've maintained for a long time that the best way to change the world is to have kids. And I still believe that. I don't think I realized at the time that I said it that I was going to need to raise some warriors, you know? Like, this is some Mad Max shit going on here. And I'm being hyperbolic, but at the same time, like, you know, I actually, here's a story. This is right in all the darkness. Luke had his graduation ceremony from preschool.
Okay.
Which is the biggest non-event that I've ever heard of, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And going in, I was just like, you know, jaded eye roll sarcasm dad the movie. You know, it was just like, I could not believe how stupid this shit was. But every kid got asked a couple of questions, and there were a lot of answers. Like, you know, we were supposed to record answers or they recorded some of the answers in class, and then we were supposed to record them singing. We couldn't get Luke to sing.
Okay.
It was like an hour and a half of trying. But all this comes together, and every other kid is like very straight-laced answers to, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you know, what's your favorite animal, and all this stuff. And then it gets to Luke. And Luke's favorite number was infinity. And his favorite animal was a cat dog, because it can meow and bark at the same time.
Okay. And is also a fan of Nickelodeon's cat dog.
And then when they did the montage of everyone singing the school theme song, the only thing they could use of Luke was his dance break in between verses. And so I watched that happen. I was like, okay, I am raising a serial nonconformist, and I'm okay with that.
Very good.
And honestly, that's all he's going to have left in this new world. So
yeah,
that was a proud parenting moment, just watching my kid being unapologetically incredibly different than every single other rehearsed bullshit answer that was given during this graduation. That was a lot of fun.
That's great.
But it's interesting. Like, you know, the problems we're facing aren't going to take a generation to solve. They're going to take more than one generation to solve. Yeah. Trying to be mindful of that as a parent is something else.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that story.
That feels heavy, but man, it's been a week.
Yeah. No, I could thank you for sharing that story. It's good to hear. So yeah, it feels weird talking about video games when all that's happening is happening. But the best answer to anxiety that I've ever found, the best answer to powerlessness, is to work to control what I can. And I'm dragging you guys along with me. So we can do, the least we can do is the regular kind of show. We've got the grind.
Control what you can with a controller.
yeah, we've got the grind, we've got the multiplayer, and we've got the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I'm going to get mine out of the way. I've been neck deep in WoF stuff here recently. You know, I've been playing games, just not games that I can really talk about here. They'll be talked about in depth elsewhere. However, I did, over this past weekend, finish Alien Isolation.
Hey!
Oh, fun. Nice.
Yeah. So... You know, I think that the things that I heard about it that, you know, kind of stuck out and things people repeat, that it's really good. However, it is way too long. It's, you know, overstays its welcome, etc. I think all of that is absolutely true. That said, there are moments and sequences in the back third of that game that are some of the coolest, kind of most tense, kind of the most tense I've been in a game like this for a good long while. They really kind of use every part of what they have with the way the xenomorphs work in that, the life cycles and such. And yeah, there's just really, really great stuff. To be had there. That said, on the way to it is an awful lot of, just a whole bunch of instant death. Like, yep. I don't know, like, how you have, I don't know how you put a player character up against facehuggers and xenomorphs and not have them kill you instantly, you know, and still be kind of true to what it is. That said, though, like, instant death is always going to be a bummer. And I kind of am always going to take a firm stance on that. So. That's kind of where I'm at, and bumping down to easy doesn't directly make that better. It just makes it so the things that will kill you instantly take a little bit longer to see.
That instant death stuff kept me from the last third of the game. I think I quit maybe about 2/3 through the game.
Yeah.
Is there any obvious solution? Like, are you sitting there when you instantly die and going, man, it would be so much better if you X?
Not necessarily. Like, I don't know. Like, it should make you feel like, you know, okay, that happens. Something happens to you. It's a real big deal. And you should think, like, I probably shouldn't do that 11 more times. you know, like, so there are facehuggers in this game. They don't show up until later, but it's an alien game. You probably figured maybe there were going to be some facehuggers. Like, I don't know. Maybe it doesn't latch on the first jump. Right. Mm-hmm. Like that's not necessarily in line with the fiction. You know, in the fiction, they're pretty much always, you know, just laser guided or whatever. But, like, I don't know, maybe you get grazed by one, you know, maybe the yeah, like maybe the alien gets up at you and gets spooked and, like, runs away because it hears something or other. Or maybe you have, like, a defensive weapon, like maybe there's something in your inventory, like in Resident Evil 2, the remake, where, you know, you expend, or if you're holding that item, then you use it to automatically, fight it off and avoid the instant death, at the expense of that item, stuff like that.
I just like the idea that, you know, they're aliens, so they don't know human biology, so it takes the face hugger a couple tries to figure out where the face is.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, or it's just like it gets a little bit overeager, jumps at you, misses. Yeah.
Yeah. We have all seen a cat, like, dreadfully misjudge a jump and just look ridiculous.
No, it meant to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you feel like, you mentioned that kind of overstays its welcome. Do you feel, though, is there any degree... You know, sometimes I feel like a horror game can get some mileage out of kind of adding almost an endurance element to the game. Do you feel like it does that at all? Or is it pretty much just like it needed more editing?
I think that it needed more editing. And I think that many of the best horror experiences that I've, like, it's hard to even name a horror game that breaks the 10-hour mark. you know. And the ones that do, like even Dead Space 2, games that I enjoy that do approach that length or exceed that length, end up being, you know, more than I necessarily want. Eventually, like some. What's that?
What about like Dark Souls?
Dark Souls has other stuff going on than just the way it is making you feel with the atmosphere and the oppression kind of stuff.
Like what is Resident Evil 4?
Yeah, to a certain extent. Although I do think Resident Evil 4 is too long, but that is the eternal battle between you and me, Ben. Yeah. Yeah. So like I understand what you're saying, David. Let's see here. Weariness or stress or exhaustion are worthwhile things to hit on you. Like, a very frenetically cut horror movie can exhaust you, but that doesn't mean that the horror movie has to be incredibly long, to make that happen. I think it's just a matter of like, you can cut down an awful lot of what happened here. Like there are like, the game climaxes about 2/3 of the way through. And then it has like little mini climb, like four or five mini climaxes afterwards. Nobody snicker or anything like that. I didn't mean to say something gross.
Nothing gross about it. It's beautiful.
So, but I'm not saying anything like necessarily original. People have talked about the length of this game to death. I am happy that I played it on stream. It was good fun getting to play that and experience it. Oh, and I played the,
I find it very funny that Alien Isolation is better experienced with us.
I also played two of the DLCs. So there is, I guess DLC that takes place on the, there is proper DLC that takes place kind of within the events of what's going on when Amanda Ripley is there. However, there are two pieces of DLC. One is called, it's like Crew Expendable, and the other is called like Last Survivor or something like that. Both of which take place. They are basically adapted scenes from the original, from the movie, where, one of them has you, like you can play as Dallas, as Ripley, or as Parker, kind of going into the vents to lure the, alien, to an airlock to get sucked out. Awesome. And like another one has you playing as Ripley, setting the ship self-destruct and then getting the hell out of Dodge. And they got like the original cast back together to do new voice lines and stuff. And all of the models look really good. It's like really good fan service. They're very short, mind you. Playing two of them in a row felt like a satisfying little unit, for as much as it was, just fan service pandering to people who like the original movie.
See, I feel like
that's like perfect for the aesthetic of the game though.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dave.
I feel like if I could have any DLC, I would love to see like the same team, same people, same engine now make a Predator survival horror game. Like, I think every Predator game that's been made so far has been a action game. I would love to see it as straight up survival horror.
Same. I would too. Survival horror out in the jungle, man.
It's so hard to like make a compelling experience when like 90% of the game or 90% of the tension is being afraid you're about to be dead. And then 10% of it is actually like the window where you are actually about to be dead.
Yes.
It's hard to do well.
Yeah. I mean, so like Alien versus Predator 2, like the human campaign in Alien versus Predator 2 does really good survival horror type stuff. And that has you facing off against both xenomorphs and aliens. Xenomorphs and Predators. Good.
They're making a Predator game this year. The people who made the Friday the 13th game.
It's already out and it has not been received well.
So it's like the Friday the 13th game.
maybe, but I also haven't heard when Friday the 13th came out, there were people, I mean, like you, but also other people kind of in the press or on Twitter who were like, hey, like, don't skip this thing. It's actually really good. I've not heard anybody making similar kind of claims about the Predator hunting ground game.
To be fair, I had not heard that it came out. So that kind of speaks to your point as well.
Yeah. Like I saw it getting like sixes and sevens. So,
that's too bad.
Yeah. I think I did that as a brief or an end boss when they first announced that, because it seemed to have promise. But you know, who knows? That might be good, and those reviews might be off base. No idea. Any questions about Alien Isolation or those two pieces of DLC?
Yeah, that sounds really cool, though.
Yeah. It always, like, it's very frequently on sale too. So, my advice that I would give to everybody, is everybody who might try to play it, do not be like me. Do not be too proud to bump it down to easy. I probably hit my head against it way too many times before I finally conceded.
Hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, how about you? What have you been playing?
Yeah, nothing incredibly new to speak of, but updates on some old games. So, okay. Everyone knows how much I love the cycle. I can't remember how much I talked about the fact that it was effectively bricked on my machine for the past month.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I would try to start it. It would sit for the load on the loading screen for, 5 minutes or so, and then just crash.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, this is an early access game. I complained about it on the Discord, on the Reddit, hopefully in a very constructive way. And I actually have a very positive story of, like, someone from the dev team reached out to me, and they said, "Hey, we know a lot of people are having the same problem you're having.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind trying some things? And we're going to try to fix this."
Oh, cool.
And so, yeah, they literally sent over, like, "Hey, okay, disable this and try that. And then go into this file and change this," and just messed around with a bunch of stuff. And eventually they got to a place where the game started right up and worked perfectly with the changes I had made. And they rolled that out to the rest of the community.
Oh, cool.
So, bad news was, for several weeks, I just could not play the cycle. Good news was that actually turned into me being able to help everyone who was having the same problems I was get back into the game. So
nice.
I've been playing that a lot in the past week, just because I can again, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
Has it
changed appreciably in the time you were gone?
Not super duper much. I'm playing duos a lot more now because I got my neighbor into playing it, which is fun. Nice. So that's been fun. The big change or the thing that's different is they added a new assault rifle to the game.
Oh, really?
Which initially I dismissed, because I'm like, you know, this is objectively worse on a couple different levels than an assault rifle that I already had. What I'd forgotten is that assault rifle is like the final reward that you get for one of the factions. So it is, you know, like I was through all of it, so I just assumed everyone had unlocked everything. And thus, you know, why would I care? What I didn't think about was the new player experience, where it's like, okay, you come in, you're new to the game. You can't have this, top level assault rifle, but here's one that is viable earlier on. So that made sense. And playing with this neighbor that I brought to the game kind of changed my perspective on that. So that was fun.
Which faction is it oriented with?
Oh, good question. I actually don't know off the top of my head. I don't think it's Korolev.
Okay, because I remember whoever the one that's basically the government faction that's, like, you know, kind of all around her. Mm-hmm. I remember their early game weapons, and in particular their, like, automatic kind of submachine gun / assault rifle type thing was particularly weak.
Yeah, that's. I think you're talking about ICA, and yes. I don't know which faction the new assault rifle belongs to, but as far as me dismissing it out of hand versus the new players actually, like, really valuing it, that was interesting to see, and I wouldn't have experienced that if I hadn't been playing with a new player, so that was fun. Managed to get my first win with my neighbor, which is, someone who's new to the game, so that was a lot of fun. I don't know whether or not he listens, but I won't tell him that usually, like, our scores are 100 points or so higher, so we got some room to improve, but it was good. it was just fun to be in there playing with another person. But yeah, so I've been playing a lot of the cycle, and then I've been playing a lot of Chimera Squad.
Oh yeah.
XCOM, and sad to report, yeah, there's no secondary difficulty spike. I'm kind of rolling through to the final end game in the difficulty that I'm in, which is normal. But it stayed fun. It stayed fresh, and I've enjoyed kind of being on the other side of the difficulty curve, and I've already started planning the next run on a higher difficulty. So
cool.
Not a ton to report there. What I will get into is, Luke, my 5-year-old, has gotten back into Pokemon.
Oh, nice. Cool.
And yeah, he's been playing. So I feel like I owe everyone an update on that front. we finally beat the water type gym.
Okay.
Nessa, the gym leader there, which was the big difficulty barrier, rolled through the fire gym on the first try. And then are now on the fighting type gym, which I think the gym that we're at now is the one gym that's different between the two versions of the game, where there's sword and shield. And it's fighting type in this version. I think it might be a different type in the other version.
Okay.
But he got there. He got defeated on his first try. And then I think made it through on his second try, but the big difficulty spike was not necessarily the gym challenge, or the gym battle itself. It was the gym challenge leading up to it, where it's a little mini game where it requires you to rotate the thumbstick.
Oh,
So you're falling. It's what's the Price is Right game where you bounce back and forth. Is it Plinko or what is that called?
Plinko.
You guys know what I'm talking? Yeah, Plinko. So it's basically a video game version of Plinko.
Okay.
Where you can rotate the disc that's falling to influence which way it bounces. And for a 5-year-old to be able to rotate the stick is
probably impossible. a little bit bigger of an ask than their motor skills yes. can meet.
Yeah. And so it was fun in terms of at first he's like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I can't do this. I've felt that before in a game in terms of there is no way in hell this is possible. And then just encouragement and trying again and again and getting the whole family involved, cheering each other on like we do. Eventually Luke was able to get through that challenge, rotating the stick and learn some new motor skills on the way.
Yeah.
And once he got through that, the gym challenge only took him a couple tries, but he's officially mastered the fighting type gym and is on to, I believe, the fairy type gym next.
So has he found an EV yet? Because I'm pretty sure an EV is in fact a cat dog.
Well, and if you guys remember, the cat dog was a character from that crazy, no thank you evil experience I had last week. And I can confirm him talking about the cat dog at graduation predates him talking about the cat dog in No Thank You Evil. So I don't know where this seed got planted. maybe with Evie, I don't think so. But it's been craziness. I don't think he actually has an Evie yet. But his crew right now, his main is Dreadnought.
Okay.
And it's an electric Pokemon. It is whatever the evolution of Electrike is. I can't remember that off the top of my head. I've got and he's got Reboots and a couple others, but
yeah.
It's really funny. The way I think he plays Pokemon influences the way we play in the backyard.
Oh yeah.
Where, if we go back into the backyard, just roughhouse and play around. And he'll yell out different Pokemon moves as he's running to wrestle or whatever, which is a lot of fun. So he'll be like, Thunder Wave, and then he'll run at me or whatever. So it's all good times.
Nice.
But yeah, he's continued to progress. He's overcome challenges, and we are through the fighting type gym.
Nice. And that's what, your third gym at this point? So is that like, is that the third gem? Like, is he almost like halfway through?
No, that one is the fourth. So there's grass, water, and fire are the first three gem types. And then they make a big deal out of the fact that you were able to beat the fire type gym leader. So that was like a rite of passage right there. And then the fighting type is the first one after that. So he is beyond the pile or beyond the pale or whatever it's called. And we'll see what comes next. I honestly have no idea what like strengths and weaknesses are against fairy type Pokemon or, you know, any of the stuff that becomes beyond, you know, water, fire, and grass. I kind of get everything else, you know, who knows, we'll figure it out together. But that game has been a really fun ongoing source of bonding and enjoyment for the whole family.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, I think that's me.
Awesome. Let's see, David, how about you?
Yeah, so let's see here. What we missed last week. So I picked up SteamWorld Dig 2, kind of trying to swoop some of Dennis's SteamWorlding.
Nice.
You bastard.
Yeah, I think a fair ways into it. I believe I've hit the level cap. Although my understanding is there's still a fair amount of actual gameplay left. It's a really interesting game, though. It kind of reminds me if someone combined Dig Dug and a Metroidvania.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And I was really surprised actually at how good the storyline is in it. You know, particularly the different, you know, characterizations and stuff like that. I like that you kind of meet some of the devolved humans. It's kind of a interesting take on the whole, like, Splatoon and, you know, all these games that do, like, oh, actually, this game that seems to be a different world is actually just the future, but
yeah.
Humans like, are gone.
It was like a nuclear war that drove humans underground and they started evolving weird.
Right, exactly. I am still not quite figuring out find a whole bunch of artifacts from the humans, but almost all of them just seem like trash.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if that in itself is a joke or like, I know a lot of them, it seems like there's a joke they're trying to make that I just don't quite know what they're going at, but that's fine.
That can also just be a bad joke.
Yeah, it could in fact be that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just so far just an extremely enjoyable game. I don't know. I feel like I've got, you know, not a lot to say about this because it's a fairly simple game other than just I really recommend it.
Mm-hmm. It's a real modest kind of product, but it's got a super enjoyable loop. Man, I think that I played the first SteamWorld Dig kind of when I was like in a little bit of a hole, which is appropriate dig. But like, you know, making a trip down and, you know, plunking away at a couple of blocks and gathering resources and getting as far as you can before you find a shortcut back to the surface. And then using that to upgrade and then going back down and going further because you have those upgrades. I mean, like, that's a common thing in survival games. See also like Subnautica. Right, where you end up going in kind of like widening circles as you find resources to upgrade. But like this combines it with just a super good. I mean, SteamWorld Dig 2 in particular takes that satisfying loop and really ups the game in the platforming. Like it just feels like a really solid platformer. I forget, are there bosses in SteamWorld Dig 2?
There are a couple. There's. I think, so I looked at the wiki, just like their general listing of like mission titles or whatever. Mm-hmm. And judging by that, I'm about three quarters of the way through. And I think I've fought like two bosses. So there is very rarely bosses. There's also a segment where you kind of travel to sort of a like almost pseudo alternate dimension, which I guess is related to the boss from the first game.
Okay.
And the game for like a short period of time becomes sort of a survival horror slash stealth game, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's very, very different, but pretty cool. It's but yeah, their, so they're
part of their goal to cover genre of game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It is interesting that, you know, now knowing that next game will be SteamWorld Heist, the plot line of this game so far is that there's a whole bunch of doomsday devices underground that are causing earthquakes. And so all of the various scientists in the world, as you're like going doing your thing trying to stop this, are all busy building rocket ships in order to escape if they need to. So it's so it's kind of a fun like foreshadowing of all that stuff.
Yeah, you can see how one thing will lead to another. Yeah.
Yeah. The nice. The other thing I like is do you have a companion in the first?
Do you have
game?
A what? I'm sorry.
A companion.
I can't recall. No, you definitely don't in the first game. No.
Okay. So this time around, you have a little spark creature that is apparently like part of the soul of the boss from the first game or something like that. You know, kind of part of the life force or something. And he's very blatantly like just tagging along because he likes destruction, is like constantly trying to goad you into, you know, doing dangerous things and, you know, blowing things up and stuff like that. Which just, you know, ends up being, I don't know, very, very adorable, very likably written.
Mm-hmm.
So at least for me, that adds a lot to the game.
Nice.
Other than that, let's see here. The actually kind of a similar vein of games that seem casual and aren't exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Game Pass added Minecraft Dungeons.
Oh shit! Yeah.
Basically, what if Diablo except Minecraft?
Mm-hmm. I saw people saying really good things about this.
Yeah, it's really good. So this is one of those tough times where, honestly, I really liked a lot of the reviews and kind of analysis that have been you know, done about this game, particularly like Polygon's kind of write up on it. I mm-hmm. think really bullseye it. So to a certain degree, this is kind of just me parroting what is already kind of the community, you know, kind of dialogue about this game.
Mm-hmm.
But what really makes it great is it's basically if you took Diablo and streamlined absolutely everything so that it was just laughably simple, you know, almost, you know, to the point of kind of being like a quote unquote, like children's game or casual game, but at the same time, having all of the actual core elements of the game so that, you know, really you are, you know, if you're playing this with kids, or whatever, are learning all those mechanics. So go on.
Someone who hasn't played Diablo before, what's like the core mechanics of the game?
So the more core mechanics of the game are basically click on lots of monsters to kill things. and they drop loot and get loot and get more powerful. Usually there's character building. In particular, you usually have your basic attack and then a selection of skills that, you know, kind of like most RPGs, you know, range from crowd control to ranged attacks, things like that. And then also, generally speaking, you always have a health potion that is sort of a on-demand heal, and it's sort of in a unique spot where, on the one hand, it does not do like a more Dungeons and Dragons oriented gameplay that really emphasizes it, or like a Dark Souls that really emphasizes conserving your health and, you know, kind of conserving those resources.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there is a strong element of like your health potions are a limited resource. So the way this, this one though, I'm sorry, I'm having real trouble falling over my words tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The way this game really kind of shakes things up is, first, almost everything about your character is determined by your equipment. So you have one piece of armor, and that basically determines your stats, and almost all of them are oriented around kind of a recognizable class. So there's an armor that's like the ranged weapons armor, or one that's the, you know, sneaky thief type armor, the tanky paladin, mm-hmm. you know, those sorts of things. Then you can equip up to three artifacts that are just straight up your cooldown based skills.
Okay.
And those, at least a number of them, seem to be fairly Minecraft themed. So you can get a fishing pole, which is basically like pulling enemies towards you. You can get a piece of meat that summons a wolf to fight with you, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the more unique things are the different weapons have dramatically different movesets. In particular, Every weapon in the game is innately AoE, so, you know, if you're standing in front of a crowd of enemies, the attack will, you know, hit several of them. However, they vary a lot in the exact nature of that. So, for example, if you're using a hammer, it's kind of you're, you know, doing a lot of slamming it on the ground and hitting everything around you.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, something like a glaive tends to be kind of a cone in front of you, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So then the actual gameplay, again, very, very scaled down. There's very few, things in the world to directly interact with in terms of like, you know, most Diablo style games have a lot of like breaking open, you know, barrels and treasure chests and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This almost turns them much more into a puzzle type element. So you at any point can pull up your map and it'll tell you how many chests and how many secrets are on the level. And almost all of those, all of the secrets are of the type of either A, you know, take the time to kind of go to this out of the way area, mm-hmm. or B, you know, find something you can interact with and then, you know, fight a couple waves of enemies.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of, like I said, it's a very simple game, but a lot of fun, you know, very, very solid. I'm currently on the what I think is the final level for the basic difficulty.
Okay.
So there's not a ton of content in the base game, although this is very much a game that's, you know, made to be run over and over again.
Yeah.
I do get the idea, though, that, you know, kind of with the dungeons, you know, moniker, that this is going to be a thing where it almost seems like they're going to do kind of a season type thing where each season will be, you know, a completely new campaign.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Which, yeah, and I feel like that really fits in with kind of how they've positioned it, of being in between being a super, super casual games as a service and being like a full-fledged RPG.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I, again, highly recommend it. You know, it's free on, free on Game Pass if you pay for Game Pass.
Right, right. You get,
which I also highly recommend.
If you have Game Pass, you have this. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, anyone who really cares about Diablo only cares about the different, like, I don't know what they call it, seasons or rifts or whatever that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it makes sense
only post-game content. Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes sense that they're kind of designing it around that extra level of, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, David, is there any building that happens in this, or is it all Diablo style stuff?
It is all Diablo style stuff, which is a little weird. The other thing that strikes me as a little weird is there's no like train destruction. Strikes me as weird because there doesn't even seem to be any of it with, you know, like, you know, kind of like preset, you know, explosives or things like that.
Yeah.
There are a couple of areas where there will be like traps, and so like blocks can fall out from under you, you know, that sort of thing. But that's about the closest I've seen.
Wow. I could see it being real cool to go into like build mode, like in first person, and build your own little dungeon and set it up.
I would like to see, you know, one of the enemies is basically a spellcaster that can kind of summon blocks around to like to box you in, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely would like to see if maybe in you know, future artifacts they added, maybe some ability to kind of channel some of the Minecraft voxel stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems weird to have a Minecraft base thing, even if it is a very different game that doesn't use that part of it.
Yeah, it is a little weird. It does keep the fact though that creepers continue to be your arch nemesis.
Oh, of course. Very cool.
Yeah. I think my favorite mission so far is your main villain is someone called the Arch Illager, which apparently illagers are like a species or a monster or something. I don't know.
I mean, peasants a species in Magic the Gathering. So why not?
Yeah, you know. Well, but the weird thing is that's completely separate from villager with a V on the beginning, which are the good guys or your allies. So
yeah.
I don't know. but one of the missions you're going into, you know, it's like they're having a celebration of, you know, their victories. And so all of the, you know, important bad guys are all in one place. So you're going to go in to crash the party and, you know, strike a blow. But like halfway through, you just end up in the dining room and all of a sudden the mission becomes smash the buffet. And you have to just go around and like destroy these like buffet tables that are spread around the area.
I mean, man, we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A BioShock Andrew Ryan scene where you don't have a choice.
I'm sorry.
Oh man. Nice. So Minecraft Dungeons. I thought about picking that up. I saw it on Switch. But yeah.
I could see it being a very good Switch game.
That was kind of why it drew my attention. I was like, oh, that might be fun to have a dungeon crawler, you know, tap them up kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided to pass on it because, you know, usual reasons. Nice.
Time.
Yeah, time. Man, that's...
time is a funny thing.
Yeah. So SteamWorld Dig 2 and Minecraft Dungeons. That is all you had, David? Mm-hmm.
That's all I've got.
Cool. And Ben, round us out.
So you either pick the right or wrong person to end with, because I don't have anything.
Yeah, no, yeah. I understand. That is fine. Well, we can move on to the next segment then.
Multiplayer.
All right, now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to do a It's a Wonderful Life on gaming as a hobby and just ask, what one game, if removed from existence, so not that it's erased or anything like that, but that it never existed in the first place, what would have the biggest negative impact and what would have the biggest positive impact if it was erased?
Hmm. Well, let's go ahead and get rolling here. Very provocative question. We have Ollie, who says, biggest positive impact, Doom. I love this game, but if it was never to have existed, I think that two things would happen. One, the biggest genre in gaming would not have been first-person shooters for the last 20 years, when companies could just fire out the same thing ad nauseum and almost guarantee cash. And two, the link between video games and real-world violence would have been harder to sell to the general public without the easy screenshots of soldiers exploding and the satanic-sounding noises. As for the game that would have a negative impact, if it had never existed, Tomb Raider. Not only did it usher in and popularize the era of 3D platformer and exploration games, but it also was a huge step towards non-white male protagonists. Yeah.
Well said.
I think I can agree with those. I like Doom, but it definitely did create, there were some externalities, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, what does Casey say?
Casey says, I think the biggest negative loss would be something like Dwarf Fortress, which gave rise to many excellent games that borrowed parts of it, while also still growing on its own and being a great game in its own right. The loss of Dwarf Fortress bugs, or I guess just Dwarf Fort bugs, on Twitter would be a crime. You could try to get rid of Shenmue. That would be great. Though I suppose someone else would have had to invent QTEs eventually. Please imagine you had to do a QTE while reading this.
I'm always imagining that. My life is a nightmare.
Press Q for nightmare.
Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, Dark Souls 3 is the most negative I have ever felt in a game. I am speaking of the ending of the Ring City, mostly as when you beat Gael and still lose. You winning plunges the world into the end, and if you haven't beat Soul of Cinder beforehand, you are basically killing yourself. So that is as bleak as it gets. But if we all had some go-karts, turtle shells, and a buttload of banana peels, we would have a party, I assure you of that. I totally misread the posting in the question of what games have a negative impact on us and positive impact on us. It has been a long day, fellas, and since the country is seeing dark times, I thought it would leave us as is. I thought it would
we could have corrected you, but we're all on a spot, buddy. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. And also, so I now really want to see, you know, I feel like if you live long enough, Nintendo will make a Mario version of a genre. I now want to see the Mario Souls like.
This is true. I mean, they branched into turn-based strategy. Like, it's got to be Souls likes are next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like you immediately fight a Goomba who regenerates and continues to fight you.
Yep,
you're very underleveled to fight him.
Let's see here, Dennis. What does Jairus say?
He says, biggest negative impact if it had never existed, Super Mario Bros. It set the standard for platformers for generations, influenced game design in all manner of ways, e.g. alternate paths, hidden items, shortcuts, etc. Biggest positive impact if it had never existed is Postal. I don't know how influential it was on game design in general, but its glorification of violence for violence's sake is pretty gross to me. Also, without it, the world would have avoided god-awful Uwe Boll movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Postal sucks. It comes from an ugly place. Yeah.
What was there was some modern day. We're not going to name it here. What's that? Oh, hey, yeah. Okay. But it's some modern day reinvention of that, which is just ill advised.
Yeah, yeah. Which is literally just where you play it as a lone gunman kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Fucking awful. let's see here. Rookie says biggest positive impact if it never existed, EverQuest. This is hard to read, you guys. I hate to say it because I put a ton of time into it, but EQ's abusive Skinner box style was successful enough that it killed a lot of creativity in the MMO space. Even now, 25 years later, MMOs are still primarily defined by their grind. Heck, the rot has even spread to shooters now. If it wasn't for EQ, the Destiny games might be, you know, satisfying beyond their moment-to-moment gameplay. Imagine a world where MMO isn't a genre of game rife with bullshit and grind, but a neutral descriptor of how many people you are playing with that could be tagged into any game. EverQuest robbed us of that world. Negative impact if it was never created, Castlevania Symphony of the Night. The first game that I know of to merge the Metroid and Castlevania styles into its own subgenre, one which I simply cannot resist. I am currently playing and loving Control, and you can draw a direct line from Symphony of the Night to that game. In addition, it could be argued that Souls-likes are an offshoot of this subgenre, though that's kind of a stretch. Symphony of the Night might not have had a huge impact on the wide world of gaming, but its impact has made gaming immeasurably more enjoyable for me through the years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Symphony of the Night is a real proof of concept. And I don't know, there'd be a shitload of other really good games that you wouldn't have if nobody else took that tack.
Yeah.
And it's hard to disagree with what Ricky is saying about EverQuest and the way that it kind of flattens MMO space kind of stuff.
Yeah. How did that compare to Ultima was before that, correct?
Only barely.
Okay.
Yeah. The only one that kind of beat all of them was Meridian 59. I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, Ultima also had, I mean, it was a little bit more wide based, you know, it wasn't just killing stuff. It was kind of more of like a more broad, like life sim kind of thing to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. You could buy houses and stuff like that, but you know, EverQuest, I mean, EverQuest directly influenced WoW, and WoW put all of that stuff even further into the mainstream of blood. All the blood of games. Sorry, I just keep saying blood over and over again.
Are we talking about Bloodborne now?
No.
Just game blood.
Yeah. Let's see here. And then David round us out with Greg.
Greg says, compared to everyone else, I'm going to have a short and simple answer. Pac-Man had a huge impact on gaming in both a positive and negative way. Good in that got more women to play video games, introduced the Maze Star of game, and was the first to get into popular culture. Everyone knows the Muncher. Negative in that it also caused parents and towns to start cracking down on minors playing the game and caused a ton of piracy. There are reportedly more illegal knockoffs and bootlegs than real machines.
Hmm.
That's interesting. Yeah. I actually didn't know any of that.
Yeah. All good answers. This is a hard one, you guys. It's definitely hard to think of both.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to like not just say like, oh, what's my favorite and least favorite game, you know?
yeah, for sure.
It's like,
I think I can go first.
Yeah.
I'll say for the one that would be best if it didn't exist, it would be Farmville. Because I think that was similar for Rookie's answer. I think it's one of the games that kind of opened the door for monetizing games and kind of having very addictive features.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of businesses got started after that, after they saw they can make a lot of money off of people.
Specifically the intersection with social media, which already had people trying to, let's say, exploit the attention economy. For a really gross euphemism, you know, the fact that those two things mixed and all of a sudden you had cross-pollination is real, real bad and gross.
That said, if Farmville didn't exist, I don't know how long it would be before something else like it would have came up, but
Right.
Here's hoping with that answer. And then I think the one that would have the most negative impact if it didn't exist, I'm going to go for similar reasons as Super Mario Brothers. I'm going to say Myst. I think that influenced a lot of game designers that are really good. If we didn't have Myst, we wouldn't have The Witness. So I'd be sad about that. So,
I mean, yeah. I thought about doing Myst for mine because I'm looking up at two Myst posters above my desk right now. I might be biased. I mean, kind of for similar reasons. I think I would probably say the original Legend of Zelda. Just in regards to like there were kind of dungeon crawl kind of games before it. And you know, basically all the constituent parts were probably done better elsewhere. The original Legend of Zelda, I think it hits this sweet spot of mystery and let's say openness and vagueness that has really touched on and inspired a lot of things that I really enjoy. Weirdly, I would not include later Zelda games in that. Huh. I would say the original Zelda and all of its opaque glory. And I don't have an answer for a game that I wish I didn't exist to just yet. So we'll see if I get one as we talk. Who else has ones? Has one?
Yeah, I can jump in. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, David.
Yeah, go ahead, David.
Okay. So I feel like for the didn't exist, I feel like for me, it's less games I wish didn't exist and more games I wish game developers didn't know existed.
Okay.
So I think for that, I would go with Super Meat Boy, or not Super Meat Boy, Binding of Isaac for introducing like, hey, we could make every game be a roguelike.
Right.
I think PlayerUnknown's Battleground for the same thing for Battle Royale, and probably Fortnite for the same thing for Battle Royale again somehow.
You just want prototypes to not exist in the psychological
sense. Yeah. Well, I don't want AAA or indie devs to realize that they can just parrot a genre.
Right.
Mm.
And strangely enough, it's both extremes seem to be the most liable to it. AA is almost always fine.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of most important, so I would say on the one hand, Dark Souls, and on the other hand, whatever would be like a comparable in terms of kind of the core casual games. So maybe like the Prince of Persia remake or something like that. Just for, I feel like, introducing some really interesting dialogue around, like, on the one hand, a game can be completely legitimate and be very easy, but on the other hand, the difficulty of a game can be a feature.
Yeah.
Another kind of quick shout out is I'm a huge fan, or am at least fascinated by games that sort of become, I guess, innately into part of the popular consciousness and folklore. So for example, I find it really fascinating that a lot of what we think of as fantasy is directly from Dungeons and Dragons. Similarly, I find it really interesting that World of Warcraft has now kind of achieve the same thing, where you'll see lots of games that aren't World of Warcraft related that have, you know, Night Elves and Forsaken and Tauren and all these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's mine.
Huh. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I would say biggest negative impact if it didn't exist for me would be Braid.
Okay.
And it's a personal answer because that is the first game that made me really realize the power of an auteur creator behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically the power of a single unique idea fully explored. So this idea of like, what if you could rewind at any point? And then all the various, you know, twists and turns that takes, just drawn out through a puzzle game into its all its logical conclusions was really, really, really cool to experience and opened my eyes to a genre of game, which is like, here's a unique mechanic. Now let's just play that out in a million different really cool ways. So, you know, Braid was the first one I was aware of. I don't know if Fez predates that or
Braid predates Fez.
Okay, there you go.
By about 2 years, I think 3 years.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure there's some, you know, puzzle game that has a unique mechanic that predates Braid, but that was the first one that was like, okay, here is a creator with a strong vision and a unique mechanic that is going to play that out in a really, really well thought out way. That I feel like gave rise to the indie game scene that I, you know, occupies my mind when I think of it today.
Yeah.
So Braid would be my answer for negative impact if it didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Positive impact if it didn't exist is also a personal example, which is Call of Duty Modern Warfare, which is the first multiplayer game I can remember where I was obsessed with my kill death ratio.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think I've ever played a game where I've had a positive kill death ratio. It just doesn't happen, folks. Like I'm not convinced it exists. You know, but that was the first game I can remember being like, oh my God, I need to be above, you know, I need to have a positive kill death ratio. And if I don't, there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like that was just you know, I enjoy multiplayer games. I enjoy competition in difficulty as its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just my first exposure to this toxic reality of you are defined by how well you do or do not perform. And I think there's a whole gaming subculture around that. That is just sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish didn't exist. So for me, the source was Call of Duty Modern Warfare. For other people, I'm sure it was like eons before that. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, whatever introduced that machismo or whatever you want to call it, we could do without.
Yeah.
Yeah. So am I the only one? Like, I was always the person who had like the lowest kill death ratio, lowest in a bad way, I guess.
Worst, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Worst kill death ratio, but highest score.
Well, that's why I love games like The Cycle, where that is a totally viable path to victory.
That's funny. And for my answer, I'm going to do one that's real basic. It sounds like it's pulled straight from like 2009 or whatever. I'm going to say Madden, not because I hate sports games, but because I like them. I used to really enjoy them. And I think that demonstrating that a yearly release, schedule, that's basically just a roster update with very few, kind of notable or let's say, you know, headline, improvements, basically kind of cheapened the entire idea of doing sports games kind of stuff. And I wish that nobody demonstrated that you can make money doing that, because I don't know, sports games are fun and they can be cool, but each one just kind of seems dumb in comparison when you just say like, oh yeah, it's just like the last one. Okay.
Yeah. Sports games are a genre I would really love to see. I don't know, some sort of just hardcore, you know, like really good developer team take and make a straight up, like, I don't know, sports MMO or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was one interesting evolution of sports games, is when you could do like the career or whatever. That's when at least it got more interesting to me. But yeah.
Oh yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. I think it's funny that sports games are kind of like sports just left my vision completely.
Yeah. Like a decade ago. more than that. Yeah. Huh. Well, thank you, Dennis, for putting up this thought-provoking question. It really, really challenged me. Yeah. Cool. So if you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thanks for posting again, Dennis.
Yeah, of course.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things in the world of video games that are exciting to us. There's a big one here that both Dennis and Ben brought. So I will throw it to both of you. Ben, why don't you give kind of the summary here?
Oh, so let's let Dennis do the summary. I just have a brief tack on to the end of it.
No, I can summarize. Okay. Basically, I mean, you know, I found this through looking at a PlayStation event that was supposed to be coming up, but it's happened for Madden. It's happened for several different events related to video games, where the people putting it on have postponed, delayed, bowed out. With the explicit statement of there are more important things that deserve to be focused on right now.
No.
And so we want to give space for those things to be heard. And I think, you know, the knee jerk reaction is to say like, oh, you're just, you know, you realize the news cycle wasn't favorable. So, you know, you're just delaying and certainly, you know, there are
multiple things can motives. Be true. Multiple things.
Yeah,
can be
exactly.
True.
You know, there can be selfish motives attributed to this. And certainly if a company carried on as if nothing was happening in the world, they should rightly so be crucified for that. Mm-hmm. So good that they, you know, even the most cynical company seems to recognize that it's prudent to give credence to what's going on in our world. But yeah, PlayStation, Madden, and several others have delayed events and said, look, the real shit that's going down in the world, the racial inequality that's going on deserves the spotlight right now. And we want to cede our you know, scheduled events to that. I'm happy to take that, even though you can assign ulterior motives to it. I'm happy to take that as a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the sign that the new normal is that companies should and are expected to mm-hmm. have stances on social issues that favor the people that they are seeking to sell to.
I mean, that's just incentives lining up, you know.
Yeah, and again, you can be as cynical or as altruistic about that as you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think the end result is
the
positive.
Result is still good. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I'm not being cynical about it. It's just, you know, like I said, multiple things can be true, and with all of those things being equal, it is the better look to say like, yeah, no, this information will still be valuable later.
Yeah.
You know, and we won't take the hit, and we won't, you know, distract people. Like that's probably good.
All right, Ben, tag on.
I have a much more shallow read on this in that I'm still waiting for Rocksteady to announce their game, and this was the venue at which I might have heard.
shit, man.
Following this, I don't care. It's fine. It's delayed. That's appropriate. I'm not trying to say that's a bad thing.
But man, I've been champing at the bit for details about Elden Ring, the new game by FromSoft.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like there was supposed to be an event where they were going to show stuff, but that was canceled due to COVID, which is understandable and good. I was hoping that maybe this would be something where I could see issues, not just because I'm impatient, which I am. I want to see more about Elden Ring. It's a game I'm very much looking forward to, but also for like my business, because like, you know, knowing when Elden Ring is going to come out is actually a pretty important thing for us.
Let's give me something to talk about.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So, it's a bummer, but like, I don't know, shit, in the grand scheme of things, probably not the biggest bummer I felt today. So whatever, let them go. Related to this, and this is something kind of related, I suppose. So the Los Angeles Convention Center, which is where E3 would have been held, I think this week or this coming weekend, something like that, now it is being used as a staging ground for the U.S. military and National Guard. for demonstrations in downtown LA. You can look at over, you can look at aerial photographs of it. If you want some real like Pinochet style stuff.
So it is being used as a staging ground for the guard or for protesters?
No, it's being used as a staging ground for the guard itself. So like they've got, ooh, it's like a depot basically for all of their vehicles and, let's say ordnance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And supplies and stuff like that. Yeah. So sucks.
Weird.
Yeah.
We live in weird times.
Oh man. So for me, I've got one that's more of just a like, hey, go look this up because it's a neat story. But there is a there's an NES game that was rumored to have existed. Like I think maybe there was an early announcement, but it ended up being canceled. The game is a licensed racing title based on the Tom Cruise movie Days of Thunder.
Oh,
okay. You remember yeah. Days of Thunder. Well, an organization, I'm trying to, yeah, the Video Game History Organization led by Frank Cifaldi. Like that's the group that puts together like the big roving roaming video game museums that pop up at different retro game events, things like that. They were able to piece the Days of Thunder game together out of the contents of I think 40 floppy disks.
Oh
yeah,
man.
Yeah, 40, wow. 40 different floppy disks. And floppy disks have a shelf life. So the actual like feat of data recovery that was done to get all of the code out and put together something that is playable is fucking monumental. And they pulled it off, and they're even going to be doing a small print run of the playable cartridges, which is nuts. So good on those guys. And if you go and look at like the technical details of the story, it is, ridiculous what they managed to do. It should have been impossible.
Hmm.
Yeah. And David, you got anything?
I do not. I have a couple of things, that I kind of had in the hopper, but I want to research them a bit more before I bring them. So I'm probably going to save it till next time.
That's okay.
Good ethics in games journalism.
how do you all feel about bunning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to this. I hope it provided you some measure of comfort and distraction in what I am sure is an even crazier world than the one in which we recorded this. I am sure, I'm not hoping for that, but at this point, gotta set my expectations right. It's been a good time here doing this with you. Instead of asking you to do anything for me, I will point you basically to go look at local bail initiatives, organizations and funds that are put together to bail out local demonstrators in whatever city you live in. There's one in Columbus. There's one for Cincinnati. I donated to Columbus one. I've been hitting a couple of them when I've been feeling the peaks of despair. I would say, take any time you would have done to do the usual bullshit we ask you to do. Look into that. See if you can help some people, because the cash bail system is a fucking farce in this country. And we all have to, in times like this, get together and make sure that people are not held without being charged and stuff like that. It's bullshit. So, I've been Cole Ross. You can follow my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross.
Mm-hmm. I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between each word.
I've been David Meismith. I just reclaimed my Twitter because it was taken over by some porn poster, which is kind of weird.
Cool.
However, it's still in process, so you currently cannot find me, but probably next week.
I cannot find you in this country.
No.
Yes.
I've been
Ben. You cannot find me in these clothes.
Been Ben Merkel at MerkelBee on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles.
Is it a real thing, David?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone hacked my account and started posting porn.
I just love the idea that all the effort it takes to, you know, steal someone's account is put towards pornography.
Unleash the porn.
Oh goodness.
Who has titles?
I do have to say I considered this multiplayer, considering like what would the effect of various games existing and not existing have on porn.
Oh, huh.
Overwatch, we need our Overwatch.
Oh geez. Who has titles?
So I just posted three. Probably the last one is actually a good title, but I just found it funny in context. But
So you have Control What You Can with a controller. They use every part of the Xenomorph, and Good Ethics in Game Journalism.
Where did you post that, by the way?
I was in the Discord chat.
Oh, Discord. Okay, I'm looking in Slack.
No, just we've got two separate things, and it's not the most elegant. Not. Yeah.
No los dos.
Dennis, you got anything?
Yeah, I have two. I have Press Q for Nightmare.
Okay.
As well as All the Blood of Games. Which, to be completely honest, I don't remember the context of.
To be fair, I don't think Cole remembered the context of it while he was saying it.
Yeah, I just started saying blood over and over again. Hey, Ben, you got anything?
I got one, but it was before the show. It's a me problem.
I kind of want that to be it just because it's so appropriate.
Okay, I mean, it's extenuating circumstances. The context for that, I think we were all commiserating. can you hear us?
I can hear you now.
Okay, weird.
I think it's a me problem.
Okay, it's a me problem. Oh. Yeah. Okay, but if this keeps happening, we may start a new call, and I'll start a new call recording.
What I can do is I can go reset my router, and that might fix things.
Let's get to the segment break and then try that. All right. Boom. So and I think one of you guys said, oh, that's just a me problem, and then I said, it's a me problem. Like Mario, like the good Mario man, because that is how I respond to my friends who are expressing some dissatisfaction, and I know that's not how I become a better person, but I, you know, you go to war with the army that you have. So
the absurdity of misery.
Like they say, you go to protest with the army that you have. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's...
it's like what they say, you go to war with the army that you have.
Yep. let's stick with that one. Yeah, I'm good with that.